Our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe will get a big day tomorrow, the official launch of the brand new book that he edited and contributed a lot of the writing to, called Story of the Red Sox. Chad is down in Florida, Fort Myers, checking out the Red Sox as well, and had some late afternoon commitments, but that didn't stop us from catching up with him earlier this afternoon. Oh, hi there, Mr. Finn.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you on this this eve of book launch day?
Pretty good. It's kind of nerve-wracking, actually, but been looking forward to it. It's been available on Amazon for a little while, so it's not that much pressure, right?
No, but it had to feel good. You posted the picture on social media the other day, getting that box of books. How awesome was that?
Yeah, that was really cool. I would like more because I have a lot of people asking me for them. But it's pretty fun. It's the book's a compilation of all the Globe's great baseball coverage through the Red Sox history. You know, Globe's been around longer than the Red Sox have, which is kind of wild, but it's true. And one of the things we found out putting the book together was the passion for the Red Sox, like in 1905, was every bit as much as it was in 1975. It was there were some of the World Series game stories back when they won, and a few in their first 10, 15 years of existence were 3,000 words long.
Wow.
I guess there were no photos and no other way for people to find out how the game went with other than reading it in the paper. So it was a real pleasant surprise to discover that the coverage has been thorough forever.
The book is called Story of the Red Sox, launching officially tomorrow. And while I'm excited to read about the great pennant races and World Series games and great players that I remember from my far too long watching the Red Sox, I'm really excited to go back and visit some of those early days, you know, the Royal Rooters and Freddie Perrin of Sanford, Maine, leading to that first World Championship.
Yeah, it's some of the older stuff is a lot of fun. Rather than having photos in the paper, they had kind of, I guess you'd call them cartoons that took up a big chunk of the page and described what happened in the game. And there, we reproduced a few of those in the book. But for me, probably the most fun putting it together was when I got into the stuff I had actually lived through. A lot of 70s bias in this book, I think, not on purpose, but you know, I first became a fan in 78, which wasn't the greatest year to become a Red Sox fan, but I was hooked even despite the outcome in game 163. And it was just so fun to revisit Peter Gammons writing about Fred Lynn, or really, I know for a lot of Red Sox fans, 67 was the turning point where it really became a part of the fabric of their lives. And there's probably more stuff in the book from 67 than any other season besides 2004. It was just so remarkable. So really such a pleasure for me just to be the one selecting these stories. And then I wrote the chapter intros and the essay at the beginning and a decent chunk of the writing. But really the story of the book is the words people wrote about them and in the time that they happened.
Well, 67 was the year for me. I was 8, 9 years old, and I may still have some of those Globe stories because I ended up keeping a scrapbook that year of anything I could get my hands on that was written about the Red Sox.
Oh, you probably got a few I missed that I'll be kicking myself over. But, yeah, I think we ended that chapter, if I remember right. No, that chapter is 10 chapters in the book, and we used 1970 as the dividing point. Because a younger generation of Red Sox players start coming up after that. But I remember the 67 is just so positive, the coverage, because it was such a surprise. And there was a column 1 or 2 days after the season ended that Bud Collins, the great tennis writer, wrote. It did a lot of other sports as a younger writer at the Globe, including baseball. And he wrote a column about, yes, they lost, but what a remarkable season it was and what a pleasure it was to watch them. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't think Dan writes the Shaughnessy writes that column these days. So you could tell in the Globe's coverage at the time how much it had captured, 67 had captured the imagination of Red Sox fans. And a little bit in 75, too, even with them losing in seven to the Reds. Gammons' writing was just so poetic that you felt like you were reading something special on every story that he wrote.
70 is a good line of demarcation because that was the start of the Bob Montgomery era.
Which is, we all look at as the pivotal point. Right?
Oh, yes,
it's
yes, yeah.
Yes, and Juan Benitez coming up a couple of years later.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those were the glory days. Louis Aparicio tripping coming around third.
Yeah. That was kind of a tough dividing point going from the Yaz's arrival in 1960 through 70 is basically a 10-year chunk, but then you get early 70s. I think I broke it up that way because that's when you started getting the arrival of Dwight Evans and, you know, some younger players that didn't stick around long. Cecil Cooper, Ben Ogilvie, guys like that they traded, but then the next wave was Jim Rice and Fred Lynn. And one of my favorite stories in the book is 1974, Bob Ryan was doing some Red Sox coverage. He was the beat guy in 1977, even though everybody associates him with basketball, right? And he wrote a story in 74, and I can hear his voice reading it, that Fred Lynn and Jim Rice down in Pawtucket were the real thing. These guys are going to come up and tear it up. And nobody in the book was more right about one particular thing than Bob Ryan was about Jim Rice and Fred Lynn.
That's fantastic. The story of the Red Sox launching officially tomorrow, available now on Amazon. Can't wait to get my hands on my autograph copy from Chad Finn as well. Let's talk. Now, you're down at Fort Myers, right?
Yeah, I got down here last night, and I'm here today to watch Javier Baez and the Tigers, I guess, take on the Red Sox and write a couple of columns. They're supposed to have some sort of book event this week, but I don't see any books or events set up right now, so hopefully I'm not missing something.
Well, I know
down here on the bandwagon.
Well, and people would say, look, it's just spring training. It doesn't mean anything. And I agree with them to a certain degree. But I dare say if you go back and look at the years when the Red Sox have won pennants, won world championships, most recently in 18, they started by playing really well in spring training.
There's my column angle then.
Boom.
I'm looking for one. There goes the Adalberto Mondesi column I was going to work on. No, I think you're right. I was talking to a beat guy this morning, and you know, we're talking about how the vibes are really good around the team. And that's not really unusual. It's spring training. Unless you have a clubhouse full of jerks, the vibes are going to be good in spring training. The only time that people really remember it being awful from the beginning, 2012, when Bobby Valentine was here and pissed off Youpilis and Pedroia right away. And then that was already a mess before they even broke the season. But it is definitely a good thing. You see guys who haven't been here very long, the Adam Duvalls and people like Justin Turner, Kenley Jansen, who's a really outgoing, likable, friendly guy, connecting right away building that sort of bond as teammates down here. It does make you think that maybe this team, while certainly not the favorite in the American League East by any stretch, might be a little bit underestimated by fans who were disappointed with the offseason.
And, you know, it looks like they got some good human beings on board, too. I was impressed yesterday during the Nesson broadcast. They interviewed reliever Richard Blyer, who I didn't know had gone to college, played with Chris Sale back at, was it Florida Gulf Coast, and back in the day when he was the stud and Sale was the young guy they didn't know about. And I mean, he just seemed like a guy who had been around, has figured it out, but might end up being an important part of this team as a solid, dependable left-handed reliever.
Yeah, I've heard a few things about him. He works really hard on film and it's a big studying the hitters guy, even by modern standards, believes in analytics and all that. The other thing is, he apparently has a really dry sense of humor. He's a great guy in the locker room, clubhouse, and seems to, they have a basketball hoop in the middle of the clubhouse, and Kenley Jansen just stands around, drains jumpers, and talks to everybody, kind of jokes around with everybody. Tanner Houck was doing that a little bit this morning, too, and Blyer's one of those guys who just has a funny comment for any conversation that's going on. So it seems like it'd be a pretty good fit. It's funny you say that about Sale. I remember hearing Sale talk about how he gave up a bomb to Jacob DeGrom when they were in college and he never lived that down. So it took him a while to become Chris Sale, I guess.
All right, so who's the guy that you think, from your years of baseball knowledge, as you, and you've been there now for, you know, a day, who's the guy that's going to surprise people this year and have a better than expected season?
If Christian Arroyo can stay healthy, I think he's actually going to turn out to be it's a big if, but it tends to be blunt force injuries that he's had and bad luck. But if he can stay healthy, I think he'll prove to be a good everyday second baseman. Terrific fielder already. I think his minus defense, five defensive run saves last year, which is pretty good in part-time role. And he's got real pop. He had two home runs the other day. If he can stay on the field, I think he's going to prove that he's an everyday player. But there's a lot of candidates. But I think Duvall's going to drive in a ton of runs, too. He led the National League a couple years ago with the Braves and Marlins, and seems like somebody who is going to really fill that role J.D. Martinez filled over the last few years.
And Paxton, of course, already has got a little, this time, with a hamstring injury. I hope he's not just one of those guys who's snake bit, because, boy, when he's healthy, he's as good as anybody out there.
Yeah, he's frustrated, clearly, and really accomplished pitcher. I mean, if this was the rotation they have right now with Sale, Kluber, and Paxton, if you had that in 2017-2018, you'd be feeling pretty good about your postseason chances, to say the least. But all these guys have question marks, and you hate seeing that when a guy's coming back from a major injury and some little setback just gets in its way. Feels like that happens a lot. Clearly a bummer for him, but hopefully something he can overcome here in the next week or two.
I'm going to switch briefly to the Celtics and ask you about Jason Tatum. The team struggling a little bit lately. Has he been playing too much? Can he hold up for another deep playoff run?
Yeah, it's been a real shooting slump since the All-Star game. Didn't take a mid-range shot last night, which I know the analytics guys downplay the mid-range, but Tatum's good there, and it feels like when the threes aren't falling, it'd be easier for him to get buckets getting into the lane. So I little bit frustrating to watch on the nights when the Sharks aren't going, and Joe's definitely playing him too many minutes. I don't really understand his thinking there, because he was in the second row watching everything last year. Tatum ran out of gas against the Warriors. So got some questions about Joe that maybe we didn't have about a month ago. And his use of his regulars rather than getting them rest when they need it during the game is one of them.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, great talk with you. As always, good luck with the book launch tomorrow. Have fun in Florida. Wear your sunscreen, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, I know. I got sunburn getting off the plane, being Irish and all, so pretty hopeless for me down here.
All right, you be safe, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, Rich.